Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, I'll just say your name and your title.
Hi, I'm Joanna Castle Miller, and I am the playwright behind The Storehouse.
Yes, The Storehouse is going to have its world premiere at the Perisphere Theater from March 10th through the 25th. If folks don't know, Perisphere always does great work over at Silver Spring Black Box Theater. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. I read the premise of this and it sounds so cool. It could have been called The Two Harriets, but I like your title, the better, the Storehouse. But give us the basic premise, who these two authors are sort of competing. I don't know if say competing, but the real life interactions between these two.
Sure. Well, this play is about, yes, two women named Harriet Beecher Stowe and Harriet Jacobs. Harriet Beecher Stowe is probably the better known for having had a huge success in writing Uncle Tom's Cabin. And Harriet Jacobs was the first fugitive slave to write her own story by her own hand. And these two women had a series of interactions together that few people know about. But essentially, Jacobs came to Harriet Beecher Stowe and asked her for her help and support as a writer. And the response was not exactly what she was looking for. And without giving away too much from the play, I will say that we sort of explore the fallout from Harriet Beecher Stowe's reaction to Harriet Jacobs.
Okay, so there is some fallout here, but we can't spoil it. But I guess we can at least tease it and tee it up to say that what sort of fault, like, is it, what, I guess, are there conflict, are there competing ideologies, or is there anything we can say, tease it without spoiling why?
Absolutely.
I'm trying to think how we can say it.
Yeah, I think that in their interactions, there's a very familiar attitude from Stowe that I've seen amongst progressives then and now. And it's one of the reasons that I really wanted to write this play. There's a sense that progress is acceptable when we are the ones who make it happen, and a reluctance to cede power to someone else to make that change happen, even if they need to have that power ceded, even if the other person could make that change better. And so that tension and how familiar it feels to our current climate is what led me to write the story and may give a little bit of an idea of how Stowe reacted to Jacob's request.
Gotcha. Thank you. That gives me a little something to work with there. Contrast if you could, or compare their upbringings, Harriet Beecher Stowe, from the North, I guess, born in Connecticut, I think, whereas Harriet Jacobs is, born in slavery in North Carolina in the South. Now, I believe, we would consider both abolitionists, in name, but like vastly different backgrounds, right?
Vastly different. Harriet Beecher Stowe, grew up in New England and to a relatively wealthy family, hyper-religious Calvinist family. She had a huge success in Uncle Tom's Cabin. She was it outsold the Bible. She was extremely wealthy from that experience. She toured the world because of it. And she was credited with changing the attitude of white people enough to make abolition a real possibility. But she struggled for her entire life with religious trauma because of her upbringing and this really deep-seated fear that she would burn in hell, even though she did so much good. In fact, no matter how much good she did, she continued to be haunted by this fear. And that really fascinated me on a personal level. It's something that I think connected these two women in a way because they both had certainly experienced a lot of loss and a lot of darkness. But Harriet Jacobs it's incomparable. The experiences that she had, she was born a slave, although she says in her book that she didn't really understand that part of who she was or her situation until she was about 7 years old, because her family worked so hard to give her a good childhood. But she experienced an enormous amount of harassment, under the hands of her master, and then eventually fled successfully. She hid out in a small crawl space that's about the size of a coffin for 7 years. Ah. And by the time she made it up to the North, she desperately wanted to tell her story. not just about her escape, which of course is extremely harrowing and very interesting, and she wisely understood that people would find it so, but to use that sort of as a launching point to have a larger conversation around what it was actually like down south. And you know, her book, Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl, is one of the clearest examples that we have to this day of not only quote unquote slave narratives, but also the culture of harassment and abuse that was unique to women and girls under slavery. And in my personal opinion, and it's certainly if you consider how well a piece of writing ages, she wrote the better book and a book that can continue to be used as a textbook today.
So in your play, I assume we would take away, as most scholars probably would agree, that obviously Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl is the text of the two that we should follow, that Uncle Tom's Cabin, you know, maybe was, you know, had a pop culture following, obviously the word. It's, well, actually speak to that pop culture too. I mean, yeah. Uncle Tom's Cabin, the phrase Uncle Tom is still used today. I mean, we've seen King and I, they do a performance of Uncle Tom's Cabin, Run Eliza Run. It is in our pop culture, but I guess mince that out for me a little bit, that it was a pop culture thing, but you know, it was controversial and not nearly as historic as Jacob's work.
Yeah, it's really hard to overstate how popular this book was. It outpaced the Bible in sales. They quite literally could not print it fast enough. They were holding printing companies open late into the night, trying to get copies out as fast as they could. It was a massive, massive success. And at the same time, something that this play deals with at great length is the fact that Stowe was not able to really control what happened to that story. And to this day, you will see Uncle Tom trending on Twitter on the regular basis, being used in common parlance, but people have not read the book and don't necessarily know what they're referring to when they say it. It's a hard book to read. It's not a particularly easy read. It as I said, does not age particularly well. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting to see the way in which it's been told and retold. It became a really common minstrel performance, which is sort of what our understanding of it today has been shaped by, are these minstrel performances that Stowe not only never approved, but also actively fought for her entire life and begged people to stop performing. She was absolutely abhorred blackface and abhorred minstrel shows, and yet had really no control over the dramatic rights of her work. So even though these two women have very different circumstances and certainly a very, very different amount of privilege with which they're writing and going into the world, they both experienced limitations on whose story gets to be told and by whom and why. And the play kind of deals with this way in which certain privileged and empowered communities are tempted to hoard creative opportunity. And for Stowe, that includes men who took her story and rewrote it, turned it into, I mean, Mickey Mouse performs in Uncle Tom's Cabin in blackface early in the 20th century. So there's a lot of different ways that this story has been pieced apart that don't really reflect what her initial intention was, and that she, until her very last days, was trying to reclaim.
Wow. Thanks for pointing that out. I had no idea about the Mickey Mouse part or what. Real quick, you mentioned that people throw around the phrase Uncle Tom on Twitter trending without really knowing it. Enlighten us. Is there, you know, how was the character Uncle Tom maybe misunderstood, or how is it portrayed in the actual story compared to maybe how it's used?
Well, in the book, Uncle Tom is, I'm going to be sensitive with how I answer this. You know,
we can just skip to something else.
Well, the way that Stowe portrayed Uncle Tom in the book, in her mind, certainly at least, was as a hero and a martyr. There are some deeply problematic things about her work. And it's not really a book that I actively recommend to people to read.
Right.
But she really cares about the idea of virtue and of right and wrong. Again, because of her religious background, these are very angelic characters that she writes about. So Tom and Eliza specifically, there's a sort of pitiful tone that she uses that I find difficult, but certainly the mentality and the purpose behind it in her mind was that they are heroic martyrs who sacrifice their lives for others, the quite literally the exact opposite of what our definition would be today of an Uncle Tom.
Wow. And these two authors, obviously vastly different stories. Harriet Jacobs overcoming unthinkable odds to get to where the point she is. You say they actually ended up having a series of meetings. How many times did they meet? You know, and give us some more on their encounters.
So their relationship happened mostly by letters. I've taken some dramatic liberties in putting them in the same room. But they met, they spoke together through letters, three times. And it's interesting, when I first started reading about Stowe, I had actually already read Harriet Jacobs's work. I had no idea that these two women had ever met. But when I started reading about Stowe and her biography, I read this one paragraph about her meeting, her letters with Jacobs, and about how, you know, that it had happened. Then I read Jacobs's biography, and an entire chapter was dedicated to her interactions with Stowe. And I think that really speaks to the level at which it mattered for these two women. These were critical moments for Jacobs, in which she was speaking, as many of us have experienced doing, she was speaking with somebody who had an enormous amount of power in her industry, and anything this woman said could have changed her life. And for Stowe, it was just another meeting in many ways. And it did end up having a lasting impact on her and on the way that she sort of saw her work. And I explore that at length in the play, but the power in that, in those interactions, can't be mistaken. The power belonged to Stowe, and you can see it just in the way that it's remembered by both women and by their biographers.
Awesome. Well, we've talked a lot, of course, about the story and the history and the background and all this stuff. They're books they wrote. But before we run, go a little more into the actual theatrical production here at Perisphere Theater. Who plays each of these two historical women?
Yeah, we have an incredible team led by our director, Amberaine Andrews. And then Adis Baruch is playing Jacobs, and Allison McAllister is playing Stowe.
And in addition to just who's playing them, what special gifts, dote on them a little bit, build them up. Why were they cast? I mean, it's your play. So, I mean, I guess hasn't even really started. Has it started yet? When does it start?
We've been on Friday.
Well, at least based on rehearsals or the cat auditions or anything that you can provide us, why do you think they were so good for the roles?
Yeah, well, I'm thrilled. First off, I mean, if I can start with Amberaine, with our director, I would love to. We have an incredible team that's led by Amberaine Andrews, and I was really excited to bring her on as someone who is bringing a Howard education in. We've already had conversations about this play early on that changed the script. So developing it with them and with this team has been critical to the overall success of the story, and especially in telling Jacobs's story with authenticity and with power. So it's just, I can't speak highly enough about Amberaine. Adis Baruch is coming in as Jacobs, and is bringing this just sensitivity and grace that Jacobs clearly had. You know, Harriet Jacobs is an icon in her own right. And an incredible writer and activist, but she also worked with Union soldiers during the Civil War. She built a school during Reconstruction and ran it with her daughter. She was a very kind, sensitive, nurturing presence. And Adis has that in droves and is bringing that really beautifully. But one thing that's interesting about both of these women, about Adis Baruch and then Allison McAllister, who's playing Stowe, is that they are also playing other characters as well. And so both of them are being asked to carry a pretty heavy weight of comedy and of other personalities. And just the physicality that she's bringing is really fun and exciting. So I'm pretty excited to see people react to what she's going to be doing as, for example, P.T. Barnum. And then Allison McAllister is playing Stowe, and is just, wouldn't imagine this would be necessary for the role, but is just so funny. She's bringing such a great sense of humor, which is critical because, both of these women were actually funny. I also try to be funny and try to write humor into all of my work. So I was pretty excited to see her, pick up some of these parts with so much energy and enthusiasm and joy. But I related to Stowe originally, for this deep sense of anxiety and and sort of intensity around her religious experiences that she put into her writing. And that's something that I think Allison really connected with as well early on, this sense that this woman really, really cares about what she's doing, even as she gets it wrong, even as she's making the wrong choices, the passion with which she makes them is so intense. And Allison brought that from the very first time we saw her.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like a fascinating production. Congrats to on writing it. And we should tell everyone, I think there's only 10 performances from March 10th through the 25th. So you got to get your tickets now. Don't miss it. It'll be gone and you'll say, "Whoa, crap, I missed it." You got to go now, parisfeartheater.com, and see the world premiere of The Storehouse. Hey, thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.